Welcome to episode 64 of the Get Balanced Podcast with Dr. Donnie.
Welcome to the Get Balanced Podcast with Dr. Donnie. If you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or emergency medical professional who would like to improve your family relationships, your physical and mental health, and want to have success at work and at home, well, this show is for you. Welcome to the Get Balanced program. Let's get started.
Hey, folks, this is Dr. Donnie, and I am telling you I'm excited that the Get Balanced Podcast has an official sponsor, and I want to tell you a little bit about them. And it is FirstNet, built with the AT&T. And what I want to tell you about them is probably part of it is that many of you already know this, but for first responders and frontline workers, communication, as we know, is not a luxury, but it's a lifesaver. And that's why FirstNet, built with AT&T, was created. Now, the FirstNet mission is to make communication faster, safer, and more collaborative for first responders and other public safety personnel. FirstNet helps first responders and frontline workers connect when they are on and off duty. They get access to priority and preemption capabilities. This means they connect to the network first. In emergency situations, first responders move to the front of the line to access critical bandwidth they need to send and receive, whether it's voice, data, video, images, and text. Now, during an emergency, FirstNet is a critical connection between first responders to technology and also to each other, giving them access to information quickly and when every second counts. With FirstNet, first responders and frontline workers get a highly secure, reliable network with 24/7, 365 customer care and monitoring. Now, to get more information about FirstNet, go visit your local AT&T store or visit firstnet.com. Now, let me go in and introduce our guest for this week. Hey, folks, welcome to the Get Balanced Podcast with Dr. Donnie. And my special guest today is Dr. Dara Rampersad of Phoenix, Arizona. And the company is yours, is Blue Paz. But before I get into all that, welcome to the show, Dara.
Thank you very much, Dr. Donnie. I appreciate being on here with you.
Oh, absolutely. And I always love having a psychologist on, one that specializes, of course, as we like to say, culturally competent therapist. As you are, and you've done so much. So I really look forward to hearing about that. And I'd like for you to share, if you would, a little bit of your background and how you got involved in all this with the listeners out there.
Sure. Thank you. So Blue Paz, I started in 2016. It was really born out of, I saw a paucity of services for first responders. I just didn't see as many service providers back then specializing in public safety and doing therapy with public safety, training with public safety, conferences with public safety. Now it seems since then that things have popped up a bit more. Now, but this is where it started off. You know, I always had a passion for working with first responders. My dad was a justice of the peace in Trinidad, where I grew up. And so seeing police officers come through the house to get warrants signed and different things was not a foreign thing to me. And My mom's brother was a police medical doctor for the Trinidad Police Force for decades. So I just kind of had this stuff around me. And when my dad was doing prison work, that's kind of how I made my entry in mental health in the field, is through doing prison work and then hopping across to doing work primarily with first responders. So it's been a really awesome journey.
Oh, that is. And you also, if I recall, spent some time in quite a bit of time in Hawaii as well, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
I went from Hawaii to a desert in Arizona. Explain that one.
Oh, man. You know, Hawaii was serendipity, as most things in my life, I suppose. You know, it's a great opportunity to work and live on Maui with working with a phenomenal community. I just love the people of Maui as well as the community in Maui. And then being able to spend time helping to build a forensic system. I was practicing as a forensic psychologist in Hawaii on Maui as the forensic coordinator for the county of Maui. And so had a chance to interact and touch a lot of lives and had my life touched by a lot of really phenomenal people too. And I always tell people one of probably the most influential conversations I've had in my life was with a probation officer friend of mine over there, Ron Babayan. And he said, help as many people as you can, as much as you can, as long as you can. And I took that with me, and I made that my internal motto and drive to give that towards first responders and to the people that I serve.
I love that. Help as many people as you can, as much as you can,
for as long as you can.
And I'm writing that down.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, really, it stuck with me, you know, all those many years ago.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of really great mentors in my life, and he definitely had an impactful conversation with me.
Now, how did you go from forensic psychology over to therapy?
Yeah, so doing the role of forensics, I considered myself like the Harry Potter sorting hat. You know, like officers would pick people up, and these folks may have severe mental health issues in the community. And we were helping them to determine, you know, could we do a diversion on somebody like this, where, you know, somebody with severe mental illness may not have to go to jail for a particular crime. If there's discretion involved, we could get them into substance abuse treatment or into mental health treatment. And so so I spent a lot of time immersed with the Maui Police Department. And so it was a really easy segue for me from working with consumers in the community that live with severe mental illness to start and to take a look on a larger scale of who are the people that are responding to the consumers with mental health issues in the community. Well, de facto, it was the police department. Mm-hmm. You know, we get four outfits that essentially get involved really frequently. We get law enforcement, EMS fire, corrections, and healthcare workers. These are the folks that tend to interact quite a lot with people that live with mental illness. So my job then became, how do I help those people to be able to help this population better? Because I know that when they go home, they have issues that they are trying to face with in their lives that are bringing them down, that influence how they are assisting people in the community. And so that's why I just went one more level up to try to figure out how to, you know, I suppose the ultimate goal was really, how do we help people with severe mental illnesses in the community, right? And then the way to do it really is helping the responder that's helping those people in the community.
Okay. And then what are some of the common themes, if you will, that responders are coming to you for? Are there some common themes, I guess?
Yeah, you know, very, very common. And I think this is important because I think that we need to normalize these things so that when people listen to programs like yours and others, they know that they are not abnormal, right?
Yeah.
We need to make sure that they understand, as you have right behind your back, right? The work-life balance is off, right? This is
right.
A piece that you get into a lot. And so when we talk about the work issues, very commonly in work, we talk about administration issues that people have. People will report constantly, I could do my job in the field, I could respond to crimes, I could take care of anything that you throw in front of me. But when I come back to the administrative side of my job, am I supported? Do I feel like the administration will have my back if I had a use of force? Will I lose my job and my welfare and the ability to take care of my family? Because they do worry about that stuff. And especially within the last, I would say, 5 years or so, even more so, you know, they're wondering a lot, you know, like if they have job security and if they made a right choice getting into this field.
Yeah.
So that's tough. And that's just on the law enforcement side. On the fire side of things, fire is facing something now that is unparalleled. A lot more firefighters now are facing hate from community members just as much more than they ever have before. And so we get assaults on EMS workers and firefighters. Firefighters are being shot at. This is unparalleled stuff that is taking place now compared to before. So these are harsh issues that they are taking care of and trying to really solve in their lives. then they're having marital issues. In fact, this year I'm presenting on this as a new topic because I think that is about time that we talk about infidelity in relationships.
Okay.
And specifically within a first responder life. And so doing infidelity. So infidelity is a huge issue. But then also trust is a big issue. So, you know, how do we blend both of those things that are taking place with the first responder? Alcohol issues are prevalent, of course, within this population. That's because it's a culture of a method to relax and to be able to socialize with people. And it usually is done ceremonially at promotion parties, casually to relax with people on the weekends, barbecues. But for some folks, it may be fine. But we have another proportion of folks that cannot control that beast, and they end up suffering tremendously with it and for it. And on the fire side of things, we get a lot more folks now who have marijuana cards. And so they are doing pain management and recreational use of marijuana a lot more than ever before. Since we have this ability to be able to do it. And so, you know, you'll never find that in a law enforcement agency, for instance, but it's unique to fire service, yeah. At least here in Arizona. And I don't know what it's like for other states that have marijuana, you know, kind of laws that are permissible. So these are some major topics that first responders face. Of course, you look at a topic like post-traumatic stress, and we talk about stress and trauma related issues, that probably is really what's sitting at the top of the list for a lot of people. And I have seen in misdiagnosis of first responders, where first responders are being misdiagnosed with something like bipolar disorder, for instance, when they actually have something like post-traumatic stress disorder. And that's because the mania side of things really tends to lend itself to what bipolar disorder looks like. But in the first responder, it's thrill seeking, it's trying to feel alive, it's trying to get that adrenaline rush, you know, it's that adrenaline moderation that really is out of balance that they're trying to figure out how do they get that to feel alive.
Is there a way to help them with that?
Yes, I think so. I think number one, I mean, you know, for all of us, I think a recognition that this is an issue. Number one, we have to fess up to it and look at ourselves straight in the mirror and know what we're doing first and why we're doing it. You know, I think that initial confrontation with yourself is the step that takes people across the boundary to reach out to providers to be able to start saying, hey, look, I can't live this way anymore. In my ability or in my quest to thrill seek, I'm popping wheelies on the highway. I'm speeding excessive rates of speed. I know I could kill myself or somebody else. I'm having multiple affairs on my spouse, and I know that this isn't right. And maybe it goes against their faith. And so people who are really spiritually grounded are doing things like this, and it doesn't sit well with them for a number of reasons, because of, you know, the promise to God as well as, you know, to what they vowed themselves as being a good human being. There's a lack of congruency, so they have to reconcile between this difference of who I see myself as and what I'm doing. And so I think us having a you know, staying with this religious theme here, come to Jesus talk, I suppose, right? Of what does this look like and how do we meld these two people together? And what are the things that you're doing that you don't want to do anymore, that you want to try to kick to the curb? That, you know, in the world of substance abuse, for instance, we ask this question, at least I do when I meet with people with substances. What does this substance do for you? What do you like about it? And a lot of times, that's the first time that somebody has ever asked somebody who's addicted to a substance that type of question. You know, what does this do for you? I know there are reasons that you love this drug or this alcohol. What do you use it for? And when the person has a chance to reflect on those things, the next question that I ask them is, what do you not like about this drug? What do you not like about the alcohol? And in a lot of similar ways is, what do you like about the behavior that you're doing, if it is in whatever type of behavior they're doing? And then what are the things that really, that they want to get rid of that they don't like? And people always have a list of, we all do. We all have a list of things that we want to get rid of or don't like in our lives.
Sure.
So I think that those are some of the first steps that I see really being able to help people make that transition across to good change in their life.
Yeah. And I think it's a great explanation. And one of the things that I would like, I guess I push for or like to get feedback on is that, you know, we've all heard of the different phrases, you know, smash the stigma and so forth. But, you know, when we look at preventive health, a lot of times we're thinking of our preventive, you know, it's physical health. When we say the words preventive health, we think of physical health. Mm-hmm. Do you think though that we can start to look at things as preventive health, as it should be physical and mental health, as in, you know, why wait to go see a therapist like you? Mm-hmm. Why wait until, you know, the barn's already burning, you know, it's engulfed in flames? Why don't we go for the inspections ahead of time? Right. What are your thoughts on that about trying to get, and it's just not in the first responders world, but just people in general, right? Let's get help before we really even think we might need help, just as a way to fine tune ourselves. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that we live in a really great time right now for first responders more than ever before, even though the climate has been negative in the past, you know, 5 years or so, maybe even a little bit longer than that. I think that what we're seeing now is that departments are stepping up and they're saying, we want to initiate doing wellness checks for our folks. And so we are going to ask our people if they work in certain specialty units or in details to go meet with a person preventatively, you know, and sometimes we have people per quarter that'll come see us. Sometimes we have people who may come once a year or twice a year, depends on whatever unit they're in. Mm-hmm. But now this is being, you know, as you talk about smashing stigma and destigmatizing things, this is how departments are doing it. And I love this approach. I think that, you know, initially a lot of people were very hesitant to saying, I don't want to go see a shrink, you know, like those people, they mess with you, right? And then, you know, but when they're being forced to do it, you know, they make a joke of it now, you know, it's like, hey, I have to go see the shrink on Tuesday because the department is making me do it, you know, but guess what? They're making you do it, buddy. So your turn is coming up, you know?
Yeah,
and so, so then it just becomes like most first responders would do. They just rag on each other and it's fun, you know? And so then you have good jokes on it and then it's no big deal. Then you normalize it, you know? So I think that I see now more departments stepping up doing this stuff. I think that I haven't really seen this on the fire side of things so far. You know, fire and law enforcement, they're such different beasts, you know, in terms of how they proceed, how they think, what their functions are. Yeah, they're both public safety, but anybody listening to this who's in both outfits know that, you know, they're different cultures and the needs and things that they actually would utilize are different. So we'll see if that permeates into the fire culture as well. I'm hopeful that it does because firefighters are just as high risk group of suicides as law enforcement officers are. And, you know, both professions are very high intensity stress, trauma exposed types of professions.
Yes, they certainly are. And as some of the listeners out there know, that my son, he just landed his first permanent part-time position in a firehouse down in suburb of Cincinnati, Ohio. So, actually I just heard him walk in the house as I'm recording right now, because I haven't seen him in probably 6 weeks or 2 months or so. He's been in fire to school, working private ambulance, trying to get his part-time job. He's been quite busy. But when I heard my daughter in the background sort of give a scream out, I could tell, I think my son Donnie came over.
That's so great.
Yeah. So, but you know, when I'm, and you know, talking about family, Dara, how about yourself? You have a family there with you?
Yeah, I do. I have a wife who's a psychologist as well. She her name is Tava. She specializes in doing work with pediatrics, and so pediatric health psychology.
Okay.
And You know, it's funny, you ask the average first responder what their worst type of call is, and it usually is a pediatric type call, you know?
Yeah.
And I oftentimes think to myself, I don't know how she works with kids. You know, that to me, that's the heart-wrenching group, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I prefer to work with criminals and first responders all day long. Not that they belong in the same categories, but I prefer that high-intensity kind of work, you know?
And then
we have a daughter, an 8-year-old daughter, who's still off this week. She starts back school next week, Lilia. And, you know, she's the love of our life, you know? And so she's, you know, it's a funny thing being in the first responder world. You know, we get exposed to so many stories and so many things that I'm part of in a dynamic kind of sense when things are happening that are going wrong in the community. And I usually get called. There's so many conversations that I cannot have with her yet. And I tell her sometimes, I say, hey, you know, honey, wait until you get older. When you get older, I have some good stories for you. You know, you'll be able to understand why I wasn't there on a holiday. You'll be able to understand why I missed this event. You'll be able to understand why I was on my phone, why I was in the corner texting, you know, why I was taking care of somebody. Those are the things that I wish, I do not wish for time to fly because I want to stay where it is.
But yes.
In the future, you know, she and I will have some good chats.
Oh, yeah. And that sort of brings me to work-life balance. And for the listeners out there, Dr. Darren, he's asked me to present at, and I'll ask you to talk a little bit about that, your Blue Paws training that's coming up in the fall. But one of the things I want to share with you is that, and I'd like to remind everyone that's listening, is that when I talk about work-life balance, a lot of times people ask me, oh, there's no such thing as work-life balance, you know, equal time at work and home. And then I usually tell people, whoa, that has nothing to do with what I call balance, you know, and in my research that published a couple of years ago, it's all about, and I usually define work-life balance in a definition. And I ask people, I say, just simply ask yourself, are your daily behaviors in alignment with your priorities in life? And you know what? People sit back and they think, if they feel like, you know what, these are my priorities and you know what, my day-to-day behaviors are pretty well match that, I say they're probably feeling pretty good and they probably feel like they're in balance, you know. But if they're not, then they probably don't feel like they're in balance. And then I always share with people that, hey, I'm not here to tell you what your priorities ought to be, but I have not found anyone that looks back on life that, you know, either they prioritize their health and health and wellness and they're happy about it, or if they didn't, they're very unhappy about it. And then the same thing with close family relationships, your spouse, your children, maybe other close family members. You know, if you prioritize them and did as much as you could, given all your circumstances, you probably feel and have close relationships, you probably feel great.
Mm-hmm.
And if you let that drop, you probably don't feel that good. So with that in mind, the way I sort of share what work-life balance is, I'd like to get your thoughts on that about, you know, because for me, it's just not just that health and wellness, but my research, I broke it down into four components. It's our physical health, right? How well are we taking care of our diet, exercise, sleep, preventive health, our mental health, our social health, and our spiritual health. And then what I had found is that, which is totally contradictory to first responders, is that the people that actually put themselves first and took care of those self-care needs, physical, psychological, social, spiritual, they were very effective in their careers and their families. But for first responders, it's always putting themselves out for others. And mm-hmm. I always try to get them to say, hey, I'm all for that, but you got to take care of yourself too. Mm-hmm. So with that little lecture on that piece is that I'd like to get your feedback on how do you think that the health and wellness, you know, how well we eat, exercise, how does that affect our mental health? What have you seen out there, and what do you, how do you practice that, and what do you believe?
Definite relationships. You know, everything that you said is spot on, and I'm thinking about a physical descriptor of what you're saying, and I'm thinking about buckets, and my buckets are my values, right? And so let's say my bucket of value, one value is my family. And so as I do a value clarification, my family falls first, my health falls maybe second. Maybe you need to reverse that. I don't know. Different people have different values in terms of what they'll rank first and second. Maybe third is employment. Maybe fourth is travel. Maybe, right? Everybody has these buckets. And I think that maybe, and I don't know that anybody has an answer for this, maybe there's a fallacy, especially within the first responder world, that I have an unlimited depth of these buckets and an unlimited number of items I could put in these buckets. But truthfully, as you talk about, and I like the way that you said this, is that, you know, what you put into this in each category really is what you're investing in that'll hopefully have a payoff at the end, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that a lot of times we do neglect all of the buckets. And so the actions that we're doing on a daily basis may not be actions that will fulfill the relationship bucket because we're detracted by somebody else at work or something else that's going on in our life. Or we may be detracted by the fast food that is easier to grab than it is taking the packed lunch that we prepped for the week, right? That a lot of folks seem to be into. I do not have a perfect balance on food stuff, that's for sure. You know, I definitely will gravitate towards grab something fast, eat when you can, you never show when you're gonna eat again, kind of mentality, right? Because, you know, you just, things get so busy, so hectic, so fast. It's not an excuse, but it's the way of practice. And I think that it's a bad habit that we all have these bad habits that we need to look at and probably readjust if we can. But I think more so too, what I'm starting to really look at and press on is the guilt that we put on ourselves, the guilty conscience for not feeling like we're doing it perfectly.
Yeah.
And that brings in itself a whole topic of conversation on perfectionism. Mm-hmm. And so when we have this strive for perfection, you know, I learned a long time ago that there's perfection and imperfection. Because, you know, we, in my opinion, are all imperfect beings that are trying to do better, but we're not there. And I don't know that we will achieve that stuff, you know. And I love, you know, that you talk about work-life balance, because when I hear that phrase, I think of the unrealistic expectation, again, of an adage that relationships are 50-50. And I know that relationships are not 50-50. Anybody who's been married knows that relationships are not 50-50. Sometimes you wake up sick as a dog and you only give 5% and your spouse or whoever else picks up 95%, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes I am performing at my peak performance, but my spouse may have a hard time. Maybe they're injured. Maybe they have chronic illness. And I pick up 85 to 89% chronically for over 5 years. You're never quite sure, right? So I think that work-life balance has to fall along the same lines, which is, you know, we cannot expect that we have to have a 50-50 balance with work and our home life, because it is going to drive us nuts as we try to have a perfect, once again, balance of things. So being more realistic, realizing that things are in flux, knowing that sometimes I'll give work 70%, and sometimes I'll give it 85%. Sometimes I'll give it 98.7%, you know, and sometimes my home life gets that 98.7%, and sometimes I get 3%, you know. But in the overall scale of things, when I look at the whole balance of things, not within a week or a month, but over 25 years or 30 years, where do my scales fall? Was I able to actually balance things out to a decent perspective? Maybe I'm weighing a little bit heavier in one category than others. Well, I need to cut myself a break. And I think that more of us need to cut ourselves a break because we're too hard on ourselves. And with that, the extra stress on ourselves really is tearing people apart.
Oh, I could not agree with you more, Dara, is that, and I see it in my workshops when I do a self-forgiveness exercise where I'm talking about guilt. And I talk about, as my listeners know, I'm Catholic, grew up Catholic. And I joke around about the Catholic guilt that we always carry around. Right. And it was just one of those things. And I said, and I go through this exercise. It's a silly exercise, but it stresses, it's a process of self-forgiveness that, I didn't learn until I was like 42 years old, you know, it was like, you know, And I'm thinking about all the time, you know, because we learn to forgive other people, mm-hmm. but most of us, many of us, I should say, never thought about actually forgiving ourselves, right? And especially with, you know, with first responders, with, you know, a lot that they handle, is that they do find that exercise, I believe, very helpful and rewarding. So it, I hear you on that.
I think that would be very good for them to have, because, you know, as you said this maybe about 7 minutes ago or so, which is the first responder typically always puts people before themselves. They will always say, hey, it's okay. I could tolerate it. You go first. You get taken care of. If there are any shots for the COVID vaccine left, I'll take it last. Don't worry about it. If there's any food that needs to be served, let the troops eat first. I'll get it last. You know, if there is mental health services that need to be taken care of, you go get the mental health treatment. I'll wait for my appointment. And this is something that, you know, going back to the beginning of our segment, we need to realize that we are important too, and it is okay to stand in line and to wait to just, you know, you have your turn just like everybody else, but stop putting people in front of you, you know, because your life matters.
Absolutely. Speaking of life, I always like to ask a question to my guests, is that you think about life, I'd like to ask you, where did you get your life principles, you know, the guiding principles that you live by? And, you know, where did those come from and what are they?
It's such a tough question. And, you know, I went to Roman Catholic school too. And so, you know, I have the guilt just like you do. So in the back of my head, there's some priests and nuns running around there, you know, with a stick and a cane, you know, getting good old, you know, corporal punishment. You know, my mom, I grew up in a very matriarchal family. All of the women in my family were very strong, hard workers. My mom was one of 11 children, and so I have a great group of aunts and uncles. My dad was one of 5 kids, so I have a great group of aunts, and he was the only boy, so a great group of aunts from that tribe, from that group. And then with that, a ton of cousins. So, you know, you learn about... in resiliency, for instance, and I'm sure we'll chat about resilience here in a moment. We talk about how you have to have adversities and face adversities to be able to build character. Well, I think it also builds resiliency, you know, and so having such a large family, seeing, I'll tease my family here for a second, but seeing psychopathology in its different ways throughout a family system, you know, it's always good too, because you learn how to be able to interact with many different types of personalities, including mine. And I put myself in that category too, right? I'm sure that I was, and still am, not always a peach to try to coordinate with sometimes. But so all of these things, I think, play a part in my shaping who I am, is mostly family upbringing, and then, you know, having some good, strong mentors throughout my career and throughout my educational life. I have, you know, friends that I have long childhood friends. I mean, 47-year-old friends, you know, I mean, I've known people for a long time. And with every move that I've made, I've gained new friends in different places that I've lived. And I've lived in a lot of places. And so moving to 3 different countries and 6 different states, it teaches you a lot about, you know, building relationships with people and learning how to interact and really appreciate new cultures and different people.
Yeah.
So I've gained a lot from a lot of different people. I've been fortunate. Mm-hmm.
Hey, you mentioned about that resiliency, and that's something that a lot of times it seems so abstract. You know, it's just hard to get our hands on it. We can't touch it. We can't buy it. Do you find, or have you found, that resiliency, is it more challenging, less challenging in the younger first responders than maybe ones in their mid careers, or are there different generations? Have you found that it's either easier or harder, this resiliency piece?
As you talk, I'm thinking, right? And you make me think about new things, which is good, you know, but I think about, you know, coal and diamonds, right? Essentially the same product, one refined and one made under pressure, right? And so you have this kind of raw product versus refined product. And you put both of those exact same compounds or substances into different environments and they'll respond differently. And I think, you know, sometimes we have younger folks that are coming in that maybe coals, pieces of coal that need to be placed under pressure for a while to develop some kind of, you know, shape and form. And you have some folks that have been around in the fire service or in law enforcement or EMS or corrections, crisis world for decades. And they have a lot of refinement and, you know, they don't have to, I'm going to jump all over the place here, but they don't have to hit the ball as hard in golf because they have the finesse behind it, right? So they know that the ball is going to travel and where it's going to go, right? They don't have to whack the ball anymore, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, yes, people will handle things differently based upon their level of experience and as well as the tools that they have available to them. And I see that in the way that resiliency plays out as well. The younger generation does get ribbed on quite a bit, and I rib on them too. So, you know, I mean, we talk about millennials as being a bad thing, right? But honestly speaking, I mean, you know, in a true sense, it's not a bad thing. They're bringing a whole new way of thinking and being that is challenging us as older people to be able to look at them and say, hey, what do they know that we don't know? Why is it that now we have more millennials, and I apologize, I don't want to categorize too harshly, but why do we have more millennials now who are deciding, hey, I don't want to show up for that interview for that job, so I'm just not going to go. Whereas people like you and I would have called in advance and said, I'm so sorry, I can't make it today. Well, this will never happen, by the way, because we'd always show up, no matter, even if we had to walk there for days, right?
Right.
But, you know, but now these folks are saying, hey, I just don't want to work. I don't want to show up to this interview. And the reason that I'm choosing public safety is because it's just a job. I want to try it out just to see, you know, for fun. And as these aren't historical answers that you would have gotten from people before. These aren't explanations or types of behaviors that you would have seen previously. So yeah, you could sit here, we could sit here and we could criticize them as being, you know, so different and blah, 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 blah. At the end of the day, they're not gonna go anywhere. We all have to live together. So it's better to understand where they're coming from. And once again, going back to what I was saying before, what are they getting out of it? There is a reason that is driving their behavior. And what do they not like about what they're getting out of it? So do they create hardships for themselves, the younger folks in fire service and law enforcement? Yeah, they do. They do create a harder environment for themselves because they are reporting to people who are not millennials.
Right.
They are reporting to people that have traditional views on public safety, and they are being held to that standard. They're not being held to the standard that they're trying to create. And so they do run into issues with that, with report writing, with follow-up, with you know, laziness at work. Supervisors go crazy trying to attend to some of these things, you know.
Yes. Yeah. Hey, I want to switch back to mental health if I could. As I mentioned, my son getting his first permanent part-time position. What advice do you have for young firefighters, law enforcement officers, EMTs, when it comes to this mental health challenge? I mean, we know they're going to see the incidents and all the thing, you know. And my son, he's actually an Afghan war. He was in the U.S. Army, so an Afghan war vet. Saul did stuff over there. And now he's going into a profession to where, you know, as he knows, he's not supposed to just pack it down and keep pushing, right? So what advice do you have for the young people that are entering this career when it comes to, like, even I think sometimes, like, if they say, okay, I'm going to go see a therapist, you know, but maybe a little introduction on how do they begin a conversation with a therapist, or how do they open up to them? Any thoughts on that?
So let's start with the, I'll break this into two parts, I suppose. Let's go based upon some of the things that have worked for people in the profession for decades. So one of the things is, it's a phrase in your mind, almost like having a mantra, like, it's not my problem. So I attend to problems, I respond to problems. By the way, I don't use the word deal with, because I think that deal with, and this, if I had to tell him one thing, it would be to take away the word deal with problems or deal with people completely, take away deal with, because that's how I see the largest amount of burnout in the profession. if I have to deal with Doro over on 16th Street and Thomas, if I had to deal with Donnie up on Maple and Cedo, those things just start to build up in terms of having to tolerate calls. And we don't want to tolerate calls. We don't want to have to put up with people. And so changing your mindset immediately from the beginning to start saying things like, I work with people, I help people, I assist people. Those are the things that really feed your soul. Those are the nutrients for your brain and for your biochemicals in your body. When I start to live a purposeful, live life, it means that I'm helping people. That's my purpose. It may not be somebody else's purpose, but that's what feeds me. And I know that for the first responder, the majority of them also get into this profession for that exact same reason, which is I want to help people. I want to make my community a better place. Well, then let's stop dealing with people, because that's your first step, right? I think that would be one thing that I want to tell him, you know, is to make sure that he has that mindset of what is my purpose and am I fulfilling my purpose through my actions, like you had mentioned earlier on. But the older folks in this is, you know, some of them have a mentality of if you respond to a lot of cases, it's not my problem. It sucks for that family, but I need to be able to close that compartment and move on to my next call. And hopefully by the end of my shift, I wouldn't remember that call that I went on, which may have included a geriatric or pediatric patient that coded. It may have included a multiple gunshot wound. It may have included an active shooter case. You know, a lot of people were killed and injured, and it sucks for them. I'm so sorry, right? But I can't take that on me. I did my job, which was to respond there. I did what I needed to do to be able to help the situation. And then I need to know that I left it all on the field on that call. And now I need to transition and move on to my next thing, because there'll always be a next call holding. And the next call holding may need some more attention that I can't be divided on. And so in a lot of ways, there are reasons why these compartments develop. And I think that the compartments are very important. We just need to make sure that, you know, we dump that compartment, hopefully at the end of the day, or the end of the week, or the end of the month. And this is where sometimes therapy really is helpful. If you think you're dumping, but you're not dumping appropriately, that means you're going to find it in a number of ways. And one of the first ways that you usually find out is from feedback from your family. They'll tell you very plainly, hey, you're being an a-hole, right? You know, you need to fix your attitude. You need to be able to reflect on your assertiveness, aggressiveness, isolation, withdrawal from your family, smoking too much, watching too much porn, you know, getting into things that you shouldn't be getting into, gambling, you know, just a whole bunch of different behaviors that people do, right?
Yeah.
And once we're able to humble ourselves to receive that feedback, that's where we could actually start making change again. Initially, most of us will dig our heels in. I know that I have, you know, we dig our heels in and we want to confront and fight and say, I'm not being that way, you're being that way, right?
Yeah.
When we finish the you know, kindergarten part of our life, we need to start figuring out now, you know what, maybe there's some truth to that and I need to listen to it and I need to readjust what I'm doing. So staying open, staying flexible, utilizing some of these things, realizing that, you know, there are an insurmountable count of issues that will happen with problems in people's lives and we cannot fix them all, you know. I'm just here to be an instrument to do what I can for as long as I can, as much as I can, as much as I can, right?
Yes, now, that is some great advice. Excellent, excellent piece. Well, let me ask you, as we're coming up on our time here, Dara, is there anything that I did not ask you that you wished I would have or that we could wanted to spend more time on?
You know, I want public safety to know that they are supported. They're supported by people like yourself. They're supported by people like me. But we have a lot of people in the community that really cherish and support what all of our public safety agencies are doing. I want folks to know that just because you have not been in the military does not mean that you cannot get post-traumatic stress. That is one of the most common misconceptions that I get from my law enforcement guys, is that they say, well, I never served in the military. How did I deserve to get post-traumatic stress? Well, it doesn't have to happen from the majority of people's careers. Donnie will not have one active shooter or officer involved shooting situation. the majority of the road rash and the trauma that people pick up is something that, you know, Dan Green is presenting at our conference, and he's going to talk about this. Sergeant Green is going to talk about PTSD by a thousand cuts. And that is how it really happens in the majority of cases. You know, civilians get post-traumatic stress issues. You know, in law enforcement agencies and departments, we get records clerks that are attending. We in prosecutors' offices, we get victim witness advocates that end up having post-traumatic stress. We have people who do intakes from crisis service centers that get traumatic stress. Crisis workers on the mental health side of things get traumatic stress. We need to pay attention to the larger picture of we are exposed to a lot more traumas now because the world is flattened because of social media and what we could get out there instantaneously. But our brains and our bodies haven't caught up to the speed of how to adjust to that. So we need to be able to slow the pace down sometimes and to realize that we are normal, but we're living in abnormal times, you know, in terms of our progress. And that post-traumatic stress doesn't have to be just a disorder. It could be an injury that workman's comp will take care of. You know, it could just be post-traumatic stress, period, for people who don't want to have a D attached to it, you know. Mm-hmm. Whatever you call it, it is important to recognize that you're not alone and that it is solvable. Getting treatment and help for post-traumatic stress is definitely something you could be treated for. It doesn't have to be by EMDR. It doesn't have to be by some TMS or some type of special type of treatment. Traditional therapy has been around forever, and it's tried and true and tested. And traditional therapy could help you just as well as any other type of therapy. So I want people to remain open-minded to the fact that that help is possible, help is available, and people can recover. So, you know, with that being said, I think the only other thing is the conference that we have coming up, which you could definitely chat about.
Yes, actually, tell us a little bit more about it. I know one speaker.
Well, you know the most important speaker to you, right? Because you have to show up at a specific time.
Yes, I know I'll be speaking, but yes, tell everyone about the conference and where, and I'll put it in the show notes where, you know, the website and everything. But how did it come about, you doing these sessions, and how has it grown?
So every year, you know, this was one of these things too, right? So every year I started to see, hey, you know, let's do something specifically for our first responders. Let's see what kind of content would really make a difference in their life to help end the suicide that we're seeing in all of our first responders, from healthcare to corrections across to law enforcement and fire EMS. And dispatch, you know, and so we need to really try to create topics that will be pertinent. So this year we have our conference. This is our fourth conference year, and very happy to say that we have phenomenal speakers like yourself that are going to talk about work-life balance. We have, as I mentioned, Sergeant Dan Green is going to talk about this post-traumatic stress and his experiences too. A lot of people that present for me end up having personal experiences, life experiences that they could really touch on, that truly touch the audience themselves. Mm-hmm. We're going to have Kepra Jack, who has a company here, Heart Fit for Duty, and she's a nurse, and she's going to come in and talk about, you know, how we keep healthy within this job. You talk about physical health, that's definitely an aspect of it. Complementary to that, my sister-in-law, Dr. Elizabeth Rice, she's a naturopathic doctor. She's going to talk about really homeopathic ways and other ways to be able to approach, you know, we call it in her particular sister segment this time is called Code 3 Nutrition. You know, what are the supplements and other things that first responders could utilize that are healthy for them to be able to manage their stress, anxiety, anger, other issues that they're constantly trying to battle with. But historically, Dr. Rice has always done nutrition. And so I'm sure she'll throw that in as well, because she has always done a good job with that, and yoga as well with our first responders. Mm-hmm. And then this year I was introduced to someone, Erin Craw, who is a daughter of a first responder. Her father was a narcotics guy, undercover guy. And she talks about what it was like for her growing up being the child of a first responder. And I really like that, and I want to multiply that in future conferences that we have too. I'd love to hear from the perspective of kids of firefighters, EMS workers, corrections folks as well. You know, we only have so many slots, and so we could only choose so many things. But then we have a retired firefighter, Nick Lorenz, who posts a lot on YouTube. Nick, you know, still on a daily basis, he is working for his mental health and trying to get that back. But post-traumatic stress, what it was like for him, you know, and he has a phenomenal story that people will get a chance to listen to. Then Dr. Kuhlman, who you had on your program, and I listened to that podcast. That was really a great podcast. She will come in and talk about how do we make resiliency a reality. You know, what does that look like as far as the things that we need to do every day, like you had mentioned, to kind of attend to. On the first day, we wrap up with something that I think is going to be very helpful for a lot of people, which is how do we debunk what treatment looks like? So I got this panel of my friends together who do treatment, substance abuse treatment and mental health treatment on a partial hospitalization, intensive outpatient program kind of perspective. So Vicky and Felicia and Deanna will come in and talk about when you come in for treatment at a facility, a substance abuse facility, what are the steps that take place and what should you know? So that way people are less anxiety ridden about it, you know?
Yes.
And then Chief Neil Gang, who's a friend of mine, he used to be here in Arizona and Scottsdale, and now he's out in Pinole County in California. He has his ASHA model of suicide prevention that he's going to present to us. Our goal ultimately is to touch a life to prevent a suicide. And I think that he will be able to hit that mark just alone in his own presentation.
Yeah.
I know that we'll have people that listen attentively to be able to figure out, you know, how do I find hope in a hopeless situation? And I think that presentations like his and others will hit that for sure. And then feeding in on that would be Matt Fiorenzo, who's a firefighter paramedic out in California as well. And he has firefighter's resiliency, road to resiliency, that he'll discuss. And then I'm going to come in and talk about infidelity. I want us to have an open conversation about infidelity and how we could kind of cut that or carve that out or decrease that in our lives. So that way we don't have to end up at the end of a gun on drinking alcohol with relationship issues falling apart, kid custody issues, child payments, split pensions, those kinds of things that I'll get into. And then we'll have Sean Stoddard, and Sean is an active MESA police officer here, also in the US Army Reserves. And Sean is a phenomenal guy who was on a highway here in Arizona. And he was on duty, stopping to remove a ladder from the road. And as he got back to his vehicle, he got struck in his car and he ended up in the ICU for many, many, many months and suffered a traumatic brain injury. And he still is a police officer and still trying to recover in his own way. He has a company that really helps to fight a lot of combat stress with veterans, archangels, and so he'll present on stuff. And then we have Scott Medlin, who we've crossed paths with professionally, and you've seen him on, he's very active on LinkedIn and YouTube and a whole bunch of stuff too. And he's going to come in and talk about how we maximize our career as an officer. And then we'll end this segment with a friend of mine down in Tucson, Stephen Johnson. I don't know if you had a chance to meet Stephen yet.
I have not. No,
but he has a foundation called IH2 Foundation, and he is a medically retired firefighter who talks about brain science and how it impacts post-traumatic stress. And so I think between both days, I mean, you know, we're going to be filled with good information that we could carry to our agencies and hopefully implement some of it somehow, you know.
Yeah,
that's a goal.
I'm sorry.
September 24th and October 1st, and they'll run from 0800 to 1600 hours on both days. Yeah. It'll be full days.
And I'll put that in the on the website in the show notes as well, where people can sign up and all of that. I can't wait. I'm going to learn a lot. Can't wait.
And the price is right. It's free. So, yes. you know, I want to make sure, you know, I mean, I acknowledge people like Joe Ramirez from Lighthouse Health and Wellness, you know, His just master sponsorship, you know, integrity sponsor level, is able to help so many first responders and their family members attend for free. And we have Oasis Behavioral Health, and we have Brain Injury Alliance of Arizona. These folks have consistently stepped up to support our first responders through the work that we're doing. And I truly appreciate what they're doing, because they're helping to make all of this stuff free for first responders.
No, absolutely. And the whole Lighthouse and Wellness, it's like we have this now, the community is getting larger, and we're all pushing down this path of health and wellness, and we're developing speed. So it's exciting.
Yeah.
It is. All right. Now, to close this show out, Dara, one thing I'd always like to share with or offer my guests. Well, a couple things. First thing is, I want you to imagine your 8-year-old daughter. Now she's 18. And she's going back, and she comes across this podcast. What would you like for your daughter to know that when she listens to this podcast? Some words from Dad.
You're gonna make me tear up, dude. Oh man. Well, you know, of course, his daddy loves you very much. You know, I mean, that is one of these things that I think the reason. She is the reason that I do what I do. In fact, on my slideshows that I teach on severe mental health issues, I tell people, I show them a picture of my child, and I say that she is the community's child, because she represents all of our children. You know, as your kids come in for treatment with me or to get help, or your uncle or your brother or your aunt or your sister, I want to treat them like I want to treat my child, which is with heart and respect and compassion and integrity and love. And I hope that she gets that. You know, I know when my mom was alive, she would always say that the reason that I do well or do good for people is so that you guys could reap the benefits. And I hope that I also do the same, that I help enough people. And you know, so that way when it's her turn, that she will feel that love from the world. That you know, and she continues to pass that on for generations to come, because I think that's how we make the world better. You know, it's not just about our state, our city, our sports team, our politics. It's so much more than that. You know, we need to take care of each other. And I think that she gets that already at 8 years old. I think that she really understands that. You know, we try to teach her that from now. But by 18, I hope that she has an even deeper entrenched set of values and beliefs that she understands her place in the world, you know, and that all that we do is really to be able to make this better for her and her kids, you know.
Absolutely.
So, those are some key things, I think.
Yes.
And your kids and the listeners' kids. I mean, this is it, right? I mean, we want to make it better for everybody.
Absolutely. Hey, to close this out, would you like to say a prayer or blessing for all of our responders out there?
Yeah, sure. I definitely pray that all of our first responders will know that in the darkest times, because almost all first responders will experience a dark time in their career, that they are not alone, and that hope and help is available, and it's an abundance if you ask for it and you reach out for it. Know that the work that you're doing is vitally important, and the families that you help and that you touch their lives with may never be able to express their gratitude to you in person, but know that you did make a difference in their life. And I wish you and your families continued health and success in your careers, in your lives, in your personal lives, as you seek work-life balance, like Dr. Donnie is talking about. And blessings to you and your family too, sir. And thank you for the opportunity.
Amen. And thank you very much.
All right, brother.
All right.
Great time with you, Don.
Thank you.
Hey, if you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or EMS professional who enjoys this podcast and would like some help with your work-life balance, you need to check out my Get Balanced program. Not sure if you are balanced or not? Join me over at DonnieHutchinson.com and take the quiz. Together, we are going to get you balanced.